when a gifted artist is hired to go on an all-expenses-paid trip to the Middle East, he thinks, wow, this is going to be a lot of fun. Little does he know, while he's there, he's going to become possessed by an Egyptian god. And then we take a look at the story of a young woman doing the most mundane of tasks, taking out the trash. But on this particular night, as she has a trash bag walking towards the dumpster, she doesn't realize that hiding in the darkness is a creature, waiting, wanting, and hungry for flesh. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys are having tons of fun doing whatever you're doing. We got a lot of stuff to cover today. So first off, riding a mule into Dead Rabbit Radio command. Everyone get on your feet and give it up for Liam. Woohoo! Yeah, we! Yeah, donkey's all kicking, doing little dances or clapping. Liam, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. Liam and the mule crew showed up at the Oregon Ghost Conference just a couple weeks ago. I met them last year, but I didn't get their names. And so this year, they're all getting their shout-outs. I really, really appreciated everyone who was able to come out and see the show. Liam, of the mule crew, you will be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially, or if you guys can't see me live, I totally understand. I really, really do. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Liam, let's go ahead and get this party started. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the Dead Rabbit Dirigible. Everyone climb on board as Liam takes us out of Dead Rabbit Radio Command and glides us, or floats us, all the way out to Egypt. Nice leisurely glide in the Dead Rabbit Dirigible. We did a story recently. I didn't know this. I'll put it up in the show notes. But apparently, Egypt has a really big hot air balloon industry. And of course, we covered it because something went tragically wrong. We don't do infomercials here on Dead Rabbit Radio. It was a horrific story about what happened to their balloon industry. But as we're flying out to the Nile, we might see a balloon or two. We might see a hot air balloon. I don't know when they were invented, because the story takes place back in the year 1842. Were there hot air balloons back then? Wasn't some 80 days guy around the world in 80 days? That's an old book. Maybe it was inspired by us, time traveling in our blimp. It's November 1842, and there's this boat below us. We're right over the Nile River in Egypt, and we see this boat below us. And it seems like a pretty fancy place to hang out, right? We see some rich people standing there and they're drinking champagne, and there's some like guards probably to protect them from crocodiles and hippos. You probably had some bodyguards there. But we also see on this boat, we see this guy walking around and he's like, oh, Osiris, oh, great Osiris, what should I do now? Oh, yes. He's like bowing on the boat. He's rocking the boat. Everyone's like, ah, the hippos are hungry. They're hungry, hungry hippos. He's praying so much. He's rocking the boat back and forth. He's like, Grand Osiris, God among all, what do you want me to do? Imagine being trapped on a boat with this lunatic, because everyone was on vacation. And that man who's freaking out on the boat, his name is Richard Dadd. Now, Richard Dadd, he is from Chatham. That's in Kent, England. He's an English bloke, an artist. An artist who, previous to this trip coming down the Nile, he used to kick it with this other group of artists. They called themselves The Click. And they sat around and they talked about art. And then they drew stuff, too. They're like, hey, man, have you ever seen pencils work better than a quill? And they're like, man, you know a lot about art. And they're like, thank you, dude. Did you know if you use a paintbrush and not your fingers, you can get really fine lines? What? That's amazing. You have this group of young artists, and kind of what they went off of was kind of like the driving force of this art movement was that art should be judged by the public, not nerds. Like, no nerds. You couldn't be like an art expert and be like, oh, when I look at this, the juxtaposition of the blue and the green, I can tell you were in deep, deep sorrow as you painted this. They wanted just some British dude walking down the street being like, oi, nice painting, mate. And that was better to them. They liked that. This, there's a bunch of art history people shaking their heads right now. They're like, no, way off of what they thought. But the clique included a bunch of people. I don't know none of these guys. But you had Richard Dadd. You had William Powell Frith. Henry O'Neill. You might know some of these names. Then there was a dude named Augustine. I mean, anyone who knows the story is like, of course, there is a name that Jason's going to laugh at for 10 minutes. If my name was William Powell Frith, I wouldn't even think anything of it. I wouldn't think that's a weird name. Or Richard Dadd. They'd probably call me Dick Dad for short. I probably wouldn't be a huge fan of that. But Richard Dad's not bad. There was one of these artists, his name was Augustus Egg. It's just his last name was Egg. And I can't imagine that he ever got married, because who wants to be Mrs. Egg? But anyways, his name is Augustus Egg. And when I was reading up about all these guys, apparently Augustus Egg had a sense of humor. He painted... This is a quote. This is from a Wikipedia article. It's about Augustus Egg. He has nothing to do with the story. I just think it's a funny name. So I wanted to talk about him. Augustus Egg. This quote says, quote, his paintings often took a humorous look at their subjects, as in his Queen Elizabeth discovers she is no longer young. That's not funny. Can't even, what did she paint? What did he possibly paint? How is that funny? That's not funny at all. It's just a picture of an old lady realizing she's an old lady. I was like, I gotta look at this guy. So I mentioned like the Far Side, like he's all drawing these sketches. I was like, okay, I gotta check out this Augustus Egg thing. I stopped researching Dick Dad for a second and I pulled up Augustus Egg. It wasn't funny. This stuff's not funny. Actually, super depressing, which I have a very high threshold of depressing. He has this series of paintings called Past and Present. It's three paintings. And the first painting, and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't make any heads or tails of it, right? I had to read, like, the description of, I was like, okay, it's a picture, but, huh? Like, tells the story? Where's the cow? Where's the Far Side jokes? He has a picture of this woman collapsed on the ground in front of her husband as their two daughters play in the corner of the room. And the dude just looks like slumped over, like he's drunk, and he's holding a piece of paper. And I was like, I don't get it. This isn't funny. Well, so I read about it. And apparently the backstory of that is he got a letter from someone saying that his wife was cheating on him, which turned out to be true. And he confronted her, and she's laying on the ground in grief, knowing that she's been found out. So it's a three-painting series. That's the first painting. That's Past. And then there's two paintings called Present. One of them is their daughters are older, and they're looking out a window across the cityscape of London, or wherever the painting took place. And then it cuts to another painting. It doesn't cut to another painting. You slightly turn your head to the right to see the other painting. At the same moment the two girls are wishing their mother could come back home, there's a painting of a dead woman holding a dead baby in the sewer. Like, listen, man, you could say it's not supposed to be Far Side. That's about as far from the Far Side as you can get. And the story is that he kicked his wife out and the kids missed her. And then she ended up dying in the gutter with her lover's child dying as well. So, I mean, it's pretty cool, right? I mean, like, the artwork's cool. It's pretty depressing. I don't know if, like, what if I went to the art gallery and they could only afford one of the paintings? It was just a picture of a woman in a sewer with a baby. And I go, oh, what? What's that about? That's not funny. That's my new judge for artwork. What? That's not funny. You wouldn't know what that's about. You'd be like, what's that about? And they go, it's called Present. It's about a woman in the gutter with a dead baby. And you're like, what type of sicko museum is this? Show me other paintings that complete the story. Well, anyways, Augustus Egg was part of this group. He has nothing else to do with the rest of the story. I just think he's a funny name and crazy story. It's July 1842. So Richard Dodd is a painter. He runs with the clique. He's doing all this stuff. And there's this guy who is going to travel through the Middle East. His name is Sir Thomas Phillips. And he goes, you know what? Like, I want a painter to come with me. I want an artist to come with me so he can draw pictures. Which makes sense, right? There were no cameras. Or if there were cameras, you're like, okay, stand still for 10 minutes. It's like a camel walking by. You're all like beating the camel, unconscious. It's all laying down. You're like, okay, there we go. This is smart, right? I guess rich people did this back then. You hire an artist. It's all caricatures. You have a giant head. You're riding a camel and the camel's on a skateboard. You hire an artist to come with you and they draw the stuff you see. So when you come back home, you have just like 50 paintings. You're like, hey, everyone, you want to see what I did in Egypt? Look at this. This is me by the pyramids. And you're standing there. You're skateboarding down the pyramids with a giant head. Like, what? You stung by a bee? Why's your head so big? He's like, it wasn't the best choice of artist. The Far Side guy had something else on his agenda. He couldn't work with me. Richard Dodd goes out there and draws pictures of like camels and Sir Thomas, like, walking down the street and stuff like that, doing selfies. It makes sense that you would do this. So you can tell people that, look how rich I am. And here's all the stuff I did in Egypt. Well, the problem is, we see this happen a lot in the Middle East. Normally, it happens in, like, Jerusalem, Israel, places like that, where they have that Messiah syndrome. Where you come there and you start to get overwhelmed and then all of a sudden you believe you're Christ. It's super weird. If it only happened once or twice, you'd be like, oh, well, maybe that guy's the real Messiah. But it happens quite commonly to the point that people have to be on the lookout for it. Tour guides and stuff like that being like, you're not the Messiah. Maybe you should go back to the hotel, get some rest. Maybe call a doctor. Anyways, he's not there. He's actually just down the Nile and he starts to believe Richard Dodd starts to basically have this Messiah complex because he can hear the voice of Osiris. He can hear the voice of this Egyptian god and it's going, Richard, Richard, I'm in your head. You can't get me out. I'm like hanging out behind your brain. But I'm not just here to be irritating. I'm actually giving you a mission. Give me control of your body and together we can destroy the demons of the world. So he starts talking to like this. He's like running around the boat, going down the Nile, being like, guys, everyone, big news. Osiris, the Egyptian god, is in my brain. He's controlling my body right now. Look at my awesome, crazy dance moves. I'm walking like an Egyptian. I have to kill a bunch of demons. This is totally dope. Like, I thought I was just going to be an artist. But no, it turns out I will be a holy warrior. And obviously everyone on the boat is like, something's wrong. We don't actually think you have Osiris in your body, or you're not even hearing him. We think you have a sunstroke. And sure enough, he gets diagnosed with a sunstroke. I don't know if he went back early, but eventually he gets back home. And his family realizes that something's not right. They can tell that, if sunstroke or not, this seems to, if not be permanent, very, very long-term illness. Because something's wrong with him mentally. They pick up on it pretty quickly. Let's fast forward almost a year. We're in August. It's August 28th, 1843. It's 9 p.m. And Richard and his dad are walking around the local park. You know, they just had a few drinks at the pub, so they're just kind of like walking it off and headed back home. But they did just have a few drinks at the pub, so the dad goes, hey, Richard, son, hold up for a second. I gotta drain the main vein, if you know what I mean. I gotta whip it out and water the bushes. So he does. He starts peeing in the bushes, and Richard's dad is standing there. He's 26 at this time. He's a very young man. He's standing there and is watching his dad urinate.
You have to kill the demons, Richard. You have to kill the demons. They infest mankind. They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Richard is hearing these voices. He's gone mad. He might have been able to keep a hold on it for this long, but he's nuts. He begins punching his dad in the back of the head while his dad's peeing, which would be the most shocking possible. How can you be more exposed than you're sitting there, you're peeing in public, and the next thing you know, someone's hitting you in the back of the head. Stop, Richard, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? Getting punched in the back of the head. Then Richard pulls out a razor blade and starts slashing it across his father's neck. You devil, I'm going to kill you, Dad. You're a devil, Dad. Oh, he just starts slashing into the flesh of the throat, blood spraying out everywhere. And then Richard pulls out a small knife, a 5-inch knife, and begins stabbing his dad over and over and over and over and over again until finally his father's dead. He's insane. He's insane, and we'll get to a possible official diagnosis at the end here, but he is insane. There's organized killers who really methodically plan everything out and try not to leave evidence. And then there's the guy who just randomly attacks his father at 9 p.m. in a public park and is covered in blood. And leaves his dad's body there and he takes off. And he doesn't know what to do. He does know that he needs to get out of here. He's going to get in trouble for this. He knows that that wasn't really his dad. It was the devil in the form of his dad, or the devil possessed his dad, whatever his brain was telling him. But he takes off and he ends up catching a coach ride, because, you know, this is 1843. It's not like you could hail an Uber. You actually like saw horses galloping down the street, and there's like an old stagecoach there, and they're like, where do you want to go, partner? And Richard jumped in. I'm assuming he at least washed his hands off. He's all dripping in blood. I'm assuming he cleaned up a little bit, but he gets in the coach and he goes, take me to France, good sir. One-way ticket to France. You got it, buddy. Gallop, brlop, 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 brlop. The horse hooves hitting the paved road. Well, on the way to France, in the stagecoach, he wasn't the only person in the stagecoach. He just murdered somebody, his father. He's in the stagecoach. Richard's dad's like, oh man, that was crazy. I didn't know my own dad was the devil, but it's a crazy world. And then he realizes that one of the people in the coach is a demon. I don't know how many people were in the coach. There was at least one other person. I hope it wasn't crowded. He begins attacking the other rider in the coach, thinking they're a demon. And the dude's like, ah, get off of me, man. Get off of me. Coach guy, shut this down. Shut this down. I'm getting stabbed in the neck. And they do catch him. He doesn't get away from this one. He actually is arrested. The other passenger in the coach ride survived. But Richard Dad is now in the hands of the authorities. And they take him out of the station. They're asking him, obviously, like, why'd you do that, dude? They found out, they knew that he killed his dad at this point. He's attacking this random guy. And he said, this is one of his quotes. He called himself, quote, the son and envoy of God, sent to exterminate the men most possessed with the demon. And the cops are like, okay, well, you're nuts. And, you know, this was, he was headed to France. He was out of England. They had to extradite him back to England. And he's so crazy at this point, even the old-timey judges were like, this guy's nuts. We can't actually put him on trial. He doesn't understand what's going on. So he's sent to Bethlehem, a.k.a. Bedlam. It was basically I don't want to use the word iconic, but such a notorious mental asylum, the name Bedlam became a slang term for madness or chaos. Now, it wasn't always the worst place to be. They had different management teams, apparently, who kind of cleaned it up for a little bit, and then it'd go crazy again. But he ends up being put in Bethlehem, in a psychiatric hospital. And while he's there, he's actually encouraged to paint. They go, that might help you. Like, that might help you kind of mentally focus. We're not going to give you any paint that could kill people. No poison. No turpentine. And all of your paintbrushes are going to be really nubby. But maybe do some painting. Maybe that'll get your mind off the fact that you murdered your father. And you think, because he's still in the delusions. It's not like now where you go to a mental hospital and they just stuff you full of so many antipsychotics, you may just be a catatonic vegetable, or they may cure you. when they actually find out what's ailing you and find the right treatment plan, they're just like, this paint. You like to paint. Paint stuff. And he started doing this big project. It was called Sketches to Illustrate the Passions. I was like, oh, dude, this is going to be dope, dude. The drawings of an insane murdering man who thinks that he's enthralled to an Egyptian god is going to be amazing stuff. And I was looking at like the titles of these things. They're the passions. So it's like grief, agony, raving, madness. Like, wouldn't you want a painting like that from a murderer? Murder was also the name of one of the paintings. He's like, oh, whatever. He's getting a little lazy on that one. He has a painting called Murder. He has a painting called Agony, Raving, Madness. And I looked it up. It's not spooky. It's not spooky at all. It looked like, I don't think I can use it for the album art. I guess it is. Public domain. It was painted in 1847 by a madman. I don't think he went down to the copyright office and got it protected. It looks like the Hawaiian Punch guy stuck in a cave. He looks just like a caveman. It's not there. I didn't get any sense of agony, raving, or madness. It made me thirsty for a Hawaiian Punch. Nowadays, he eventually died. You know, eventually he passed away. He's not immortal. Nowadays, he died in 1886, so he was locked up for 43 years. He was in custody. Nowadays, people believe that he had schizophrenia. That was actually undiagnosed schizophrenia. Two of his siblings did have schizophrenia, and another one of his siblings may have had it. So they think that it was just that. They don't. Science is never going to say, well, maybe he was possessed by an Egyptian god. You don't know. They're not going to say that. They will say, if you have a family of people with mental illness, it's a chance that you might suffer from that mental illness as well. But that's what they thought. And what I thought was interesting too is when you look into, we'll wrap it up like this, when you look at Bethlehem, that madhouse, that was your entertainment. Like, locals would be like, honey, what are we gonna do tonight? We're like in the 1840s, life is super boring and lame. I saw a cloud go by today. That was the most enthralling thing possible. And then the wife's like, well, honey, we've always been talking about going to Bethlehem. Not as inmates, but as sightseers. And he's like, you're right. So they get together some pence and some copper doubloons or whatever. And you could go down to Bethlehem and you walk around the mental asylum. And you would look in, the doors had little windows, and you would look in and you'd see people going, no, no, the ants, they're all over me. They're all over me. Ah, and they're scratching at their skin. And then you go to the next door and it's this guy going, look at me, everybody. I'm a teapot. Don't shake me. He will come out. And you go to the next door and there's just some guy. He's the jump scare door. He hides down below the glass. You look in. You're like, oh, this room's empty. Ah! The guy jumps up. Looks like the Hawaiian Punch guy. He says that people would go here. It was entertainment for them. They would visit it and they would go. I mean, it makes sense, right? It old-timey stuff was super boring. Like, maybe every so often there'd be a joust. Maybe you'd be like, hey, what are we going to do, honey? Oh, let's go to see those two knights collide into each other at 30 miles an hour. That's always entertaining. But you could also go there. And it's entertaining to watch these maniacs run around and be opening doors. I'm like, hey, these two guys, that guy's been talking trash about you. And they're like, what? And then I go to the next door and I'm like, dude, that guy says you're not insane at all. He just says you're faking it. What? I'm super insane. And then open the doors and watch them fight. That'd be even more entertaining. But also, not only is it entertaining, it also is this whole like, well, at least we're not as bad off as those people. So yeah, they would go and they would just hang out and watch people worse off than them. And then they could come back to their cots that are in their old timey Ichabod Crane house. And they have like one lump of coal. And they're like, this lump of coal, kids, has to last all winter. And they light it, and it kind of burns, and everyone falls asleep. And as you're falling asleep, it's your succumbing to hypothermia. Because you need more piece of what you need, more than one piece of coal. You probably should have bought coal instead of going to Bethlehem. But as you're falling asleep, and you're losing the feeling in your fingers and toes, you can go, well, you know, this isn't great, but at least I'm not a stark raving lunatic at Bethlehem. So, you know. A little bit of entertainment, a little bit of moral superiority. Liam, let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world-famous Carpenter Copter. We are leaving behind England. Fly us all the way out to Texas. We're headed all the way out to Texas. Specifically, we're going to be in Houston, Texas. The year is 2017. Now, if you're familiar with this area, I would be interested if some of you guys wanted to do a field report for us. This might be a one-off thing. This might be something extremely dangerous. Somewhere in the middle. Feel free to judge your own safety level if you live in the area, because we have an exact address for this place. There's a place, and I believe it's still there, because this is one of the places I pulled up on Google Earth. In Houston, Texas, which is a big city, we have a address here, 3745 Greenbrier Street. There's a Freebirds burrito restaurant. Never heard of it. I've heard of burritos, obviously. I don't know if it's like a big, delicious Chipotle burrito. Hopefully. Anyways, I'll ever go there. I'm like showing up. I was like, oh man, these are lame burritos. They're all full of mushrooms and garbage. We're at the Freebirds Burrito Restaurant in a strip mall here in the middle of the city. And we're about to meet a young woman named Teresa. That's not her real name, but she is currently working at Freebirds. And people are like, can I get some more guacamole on my burrito? And she's like, yeah, sure. I want all rice. I just want a tortilla full of rice. We'll have to charge you full price. That's fine. She's serving up the good people of Houston, Texas, 2 Mondo burritos, please. Here you go. And this goes on through the normal workday, but then everyone leaves. It's nighttime. The restaurant closes. It's time for her to take out the trash. She has this cart that they throw the garbage in, because otherwise you'd be making 50 trips. You throw the garbage bags in a cart. You wheel it out to behind the Freebirds. Again, I was trying to look at the aerial photo of it. I don't know if it's behind it or on the side, but there is this dumpster area. Take it out, throw it in the dump. Now, Freebirds is in this strip mall, in this shopping mall center that used to be full. This is one of those places that had a shop in every location. You'd go there and you'd spend a couple hours there looking at different stuff. It's perfect. Peak America, right? But a lot of those places have gone out of business. Now, the only places that are in this mall are Freebirds, an ice cream store, and a place called Tuesday Morning, which apparently is like home furnishings. You have a lot of homeless population move into this area because it's relatively sheltered. And since there's not a lot of people, unless they're going to one of these three places, no one's going to call the cops on him. It's not the ideal place that Teresa wants to be working. Not that she didn't like Freebirds, but it got a little bit spookier to come out at night to throw away this garbage. And on top of it, Freebirds itself, this burrito restaurant itself, was reportedly haunted. Teresa said at Freebirds, you would sometimes hear something imitating somebody's voice. Teresa, come here. Huh? You look around. There's no one there. And it was imitating the voice of your manager who left 4 hours ago. Poltergeist activity, things getting knocked down like that. Those are things we can explain. The fact that we can even use the word haunted is a catch-all term. We can go, okay, yeah, we know what that is. If it ever got to be too much, we know how to deal with it. Bring in a spiritual advisor, try to do it yourself, whatever. But there's tips and tools and techniques we can use. Well, on this particular night in 2017, Teresa is taking out the trash. She's working that night shift. Everything's shut down. She loads up the cart and she pushes it into the back alley. And she's headed towards the dumpster, and then she sees it. It's crouched down on all fours. It's not moving, just crouched. And it takes Teresa kind of a second for her brain to register what she is seeing. She said it was as big as either a large dog or a small human. So I think we can put it around four feet tall, 4.5, somewhere around there. It had grayish tan skin. And it was thin. So thin that she could actually see its spine protruding against its flesh. It had a small almond-shaped head. And it was either squinting or this thing had no eyes. She couldn't see any sign of a mouth or a nose either. It was crouched down, and she said the way that the joints were bent were like a spider's. So it's on all fours, it's crouched down. I would imagine that means that the elbows were sticking out kind of parallel to the knees. And in an uncomfortable position for a human to take for any amount of time, it was just in this position, and it's unmoving. Teresa sees this, and she freezes. Oh, and let me say this, too. This was an interesting detail. She's describing this thing, and she goes, I don't know what its feet looked like. And we'll get to that in a second, because that is an important detail. I don't know what its feet looked like. But she's pushing this cart, and she sees this, and she freezes, and she does what I think most of us would do. She turns and runs back into the store, back into the burrito restaurant. And she's standing there, and she does have a coworker there, but she's standing there, and she is trying to convince herself that what she just saw, she did not see. That's impossible. That can't have been something. There's no living animal that really looks like that. And she's thinking about it, and she's processing it, and she goes, that has to have just been in my imagination. That can't be real. And she calms herself down. And she walks back out of the restaurant, down the back alley, to where the cart is, to where the dumpster is, to where this thing may be. And she walks over, and she gets to the cart, and she looks, and it's still crouched down. Right there, right by the dumpster, just crouched down, unmoving. She ran back into the burrito. Now she knows, right? Now she knows there's something here. It wasn't a trick of the light or anything like that. She runs back into the burrito restaurant. She tells her manager, which you can just imagine the manager's like, what are you talking about? As a poltergeist is making a bunch of cans fly around in the background. We have a poltergeist, so we don't have whatever he thinks out there. What are you talking about? No, there's something out there. You can be vague in these situations, right? I always recommend being vague. If you call 911 and say, I think Bigfoot's outside my house, then the police are going to laugh at you. If you go, there's an intruder outside my house and he's really tall and I'm afraid he's going to get in, they'll treat that like any other call. When they get out there, then you can tell them it was a Bigfoot. I don't know if she said, there's something out there, I don't feel comfortable, or I just saw something, or she goes, Manager, there's a monster outside. Either way, the manager said, well, Teresa, let's go out there. We got to throw the garbage away. See, that's the thing. This wasn't like she was out for a jog. She could just pick a different path. She has to throw the garbage away. The manager walks out there with Teresa, and they see the cart there, and they continue to walk towards the cart, and then they get to the dumpster, and they look, and it's gone. It's an interesting story for a couple different reasons. And first off, I want to say I got this story. It was posted online by the name Natural Born Child. It could be a couple different things going on here. One, I think the immediate thing we would go to is a crawler. I've seen a crawler. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that was a thing when I saw it. I saw it once, possibly twice. The second time could have been something else, but because I didn't get a good look at it. Those are generally described as long, lanky creatures with really, really tight skin, pale skin. The one I saw, I'll put the episode in the show notes, and a couple other crawler episodes we've done. I would say it was probably around It was on all fours. It looked more like it was walking like a dog with no tail. And I caught the hindquarters as I was walking. It was walking across the sidewalk in front of a parked car. I could clearly see from the rib cage down. And I was waiting. I thought it was like a wild animal. I saw that from the rib cage down. I watched it move in front of me from a distance of maybe 10 or less feet, like 5 to 10 feet. It was very close. And it walked in front of this car. I didn't see the first half of it. And I was afraid it was a wild animal. And I was thinking it was hiding behind the front of the car because I'm walking down the sidewalk. It's like 5 in the morning. So I actually walk out into the street so I can give myself a wide loop around if it's something I want to see it coming before I bash its brains in. And I take a wide loop into the street and there's nothing in the front of the car. And it didn't move past me. It didn't cross the street itself before I got out there. Yeah, I would say the same thing. You could see the bones pressing against the skin. Like, when I saw that, I didn't know there was a thing called the crawler. I knew of, like, skin crawlers, and I knew of the rake, stuff like that. But there's actually a lot of you guys pointed me to the subreddit crawler encounters or crawler sightings. I'll put that in the show notes. That could be this. Crawlers, though, and I could be wrong, it's kind of a newer cryptid, or at least people are reporting them now. Generally, they do have a face. Generally, they do have eyes. Generally, they are in motion, but not all the time. I'm not going to say if there's one hiding in my closet, I'm like, you're not a crawler because you're not moving around. Could be a crawler. We don't know what they are. We don't know why they're here. We don't know where they come from. We don't know what they want. I know in the intro I said it was hungry for human flesh. That might have been a little clickbaity, but I'll explain that in a second as well. It could have been a crawler. There's two other interesting things going on with this. I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm not going to say that I can't be fooled, because I have been fooled, and I will be fooled in the future. That's just the nature of the game when you're covering stuff that one person is telling you about. There are episodes where I've reported on that turned out not to be true. I'll put those in the show notes, too. Those are some really cool episodes, because I'll do the episode where I got fooled and then the episode explaining what we found out afterwards. I read this stuff for hours a day. And what's interesting is sometimes there's a magic number of details in a true story. If you don't give any details, the story could be true. If you give every single detail, the story could still be true. But usually in a moment in time, you may not know what its feet looked like. It's completely irrelevant to the survival instinct of a human encountering something from beyond. Now, if she included the fact that its feet looked like this or that, hooves or big or whatever, I'm not necessarily going to say the story is true. But a true story won't wrap up perfectly in a bow, is what I'm saying. Not saying it's always 100% true, but those are sometimes the details or lack of details that you look for. I don't remember what the feet looked like when it was walking in front of me. I didn't think at all that it was paranormal when I saw this thing. I couldn't tell you if the back feet looked like hands or paws or whatever. It had nothing to do with what I thought it could be. I thought it was like a bear with mange or a big dog with no hair. So my brain would assume it had bear paws or dog paws. Once I walked into the road and circled around the vehicle and realized what I saw was not necessarily a biological creature or a biological creature that could vanish into thin air. I don't think it had bear paws or dog paws, but my brain didn't register it because it wasn't important to my survival in that moment. Very interesting. The lack of the detail can make the story sound more credible. The thing about saying that it hungered for human flesh in the beginning, yes, was a little clickbaity. But what was interesting is, usually I don't interact with people on Reddit who have posted these stories for a couple different reasons. Sometimes it can encourage them to modify the story to make it more exciting. Sometimes it could scare them off, right? I'm here to report on stories that I think help build up the World of the Paranormal, and report on stories that are funny or just weird, but, you know, like, I'll do both. This is one of the few that I actually reached out to because she included, she made this phrase a couple times. She said this thing a couple times. She said that she thought this might have been a quote-unquote test. She used that word once in the narrative, and then looking through the posting history, I believe she did use it a few more times. She would refer to this as, I think this was a quote-unquote test that, quote, she wasn't supposed to see, unquote. And so I asked her, what did you mean by it was a test? It's a very, very interesting choice of words with that thing. It really adds a level of intelligence. A trap, any animal can set a trap. We have animals called like trapdoor spiders. A lot of animals will use traps. So I responded to this when I said, it does remind me of a crawler, but I'm curious what you meant by it might have been a quote-unquote test. Could you go into more detail about that? And she responded, quote, I'm not 100% sure it was alive. So still not really giving more of a reason why using that particular word. Now, it was, did she think it was a hologram or a facsimile? Which would be above whatever we don't know about crawlers, which we know very, very little about crawlers, if anything, just that they exist and people have seen them. If someone was using the image of a crawler, that would be a whole completely different phenomenon. Imagine if crawlers didn't exist in any way, shape, or form. They were not even manifestations, they were illusions created by something else for whatever reason. But when you have people come, the reason why I think that word's important, test, is that you will talk to someone who has had a ghostly experience, and they'll tell you a story, and then at the ending they'll say, and I got a really dark feeling from it. But the story they tell you isn't dark. They'll say, I woke up in the middle of the night, and I saw my dad standing at the foot of my bed, and my dad died 3 years ago. You're like, oh man, were you scared? No, I mean, he just stood there for a bit, and I really didn't know what to do, and I just kind of closed my eyes and went back to sleep. Could have been a dream, but it was just weird. I've never had a dream like that. And you're like, wow, it's crazy. And then they go, and also, I had a really, really dark feeling. Like, something wasn't right. But why? Why did you have the dark feeling? And they'll say, I don't know. But it changes the narrative. It kind of throws the story. And now it makes you think, well, maybe that wasn't her dad. Or maybe the dad came for a nefarious reason. Who knows? Who knows? But sometimes by putting in those words, it changes the game. There's nothing about the narrative that I told you that would make you think it was a test. But that's what her gut reaction is telling her. So what that makes me think is there are details that her subconscious brain was taking in during this encounter that she is not able to express verbally. So there's two things going on there. And this is one of those stories, like so many on this podcast, that I could go on forever and ever about this. This is one of those stories that she saw that thing and more was happening, but her brain won't let her remember it. Something else could have happened in that alleyway and her brain can't process it. We know that we don't have a loss of time. She walked out, she went to put the garbage away, she got scared, ran back in, she walked back out. She ran back in, she got her manager. If she was there alone and she goes, I came back in and it was 4:30 in the morning, I don't know where the time went. Now we got a whole other slew of options. But it's possible that she saw something that her brain could not process. And she just got the feeling like she was being tested in a sort of way. And I think you could argue, too, that other people could have done this exact same thing. I mean, obviously, she says, you know, I was taking the garbage out. This wasn't the first time she took the garbage out. Might have been the last. I'm not for sure. But other people working there, they never reported seeing anything. So was this something that only she could perceive? Was it, again, a test? I'm kind of hung up on that word as well, as far as what that could be. And it does play into my idea that I love that's come out of this podcast. I never really thought about it before, is the urban cryptid. If there are a thing, if cryptids are real, you would have had some of them evolve to live in a urban environment like we have. We've adjusted to living in cities and suburbs. And these creatures that used to inhabit this area, now that a city sprung up, some of them may have gone deeper into the woods. Sure, but some of them would stay, just like any other animal. I mean, the pigeon population of New York City, they probably love being an urban animal. It's just unlimited food. They can see predators from miles away on top of those buildings. And Mike Tyson takes care of you. But the pigeons would have a fine time in a field as well. These modern pigeons, they are just very acclimated to modern life. If a human can acclimate to a new environment, an urban environment, and we know animals can, then cryptids probably would too. And you may have these things hidden. See, my reading of the story is that my reading of the story is that this thing was trying to camouflage itself, and it was doing it poorly. And that's why she saw it. That thing could be out there every Friday night for all we know. That could be where it sleeps, and it's usually camouflaged, but for whatever reason, this time, it wasn't. It's also interesting to say she thinks it's a test, and then she says, I'm not 100% sure it was alive. It could have been a dead crawler. It could have been the husk of one. But if that's the case, where did it disappear to? It's a fascinating story. I love stuff like this. We have always built up in our heads to go to the ghost, you go to the haunted house. To go to the monster, you go into the woods, you go into the wilderness. And I think that that's just kind of ingrained into our head through horror movies and horror novels and things like that. When in fact, all of this stuff could be way closer than we think. You may interact with ghosts on a weekly basis, not even in a haunted house. Just go into the store. You'd never know. And you could be passing by these cryptids, some of them disguised as humans, some of them living in our society, perfectly blending into the background with some sort of natural camouflage, not looking like a human, but just blending in with the shadows of an alleyway. And part of the scary thing about the story is we don't know what it wants. It could have just wanted a nice, peaceful sleep, and some girl kept jumping around the corner and freaking it out. And it's like, fine, I'll go somewhere else. Or it could have been a trap. It could have been looking for something or someone to eat. You imagine, we talked about this a long time ago, a cryptid that feasted on the homeless population is basically the king of the food chain. When a homeless person disappears, they're transient. They have no home. So even their closest buddies, they may go, well, he always talked about going back to the West Coast. But really, that homeless man was devoured by some sort of creature living amongst us. And that could have been what drew this creature to this area in the first place. Why Teresa saw it. And it left. Or it camouflaged itself or whatever it was. But super interesting story. Just a reminder, when it comes to the world of the weird, we may not be as safe as we think we are. There may be no safety in numbers. There may be no safety in daylight. These things could be everywhere. And since we don't know what they want or what they are capable of, we can only assume the worst. But even if you knew they existed for sure, a creature with this type of predatory skill that can vanish right before your eyes, like the one I saw, or this one that can apparently camouflage itself, or it moved away silently, like, what would we even do to protect ourselves from these things? It's one thing for Bigfoot to be in the woods. It's another thing for one of these guys to be hanging out behind a dumpster at a local fast food restaurant. We may have predators living amongst us, viewing humanity as just another food source. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.